Hey you and welcome, my name is Mike, and this is another episode of the That Chapter podcast, in case you clicked on something else by accident. I'm here, joined...
And if you did, stay, it's great.
Yes, exactly, please don't leave, we're so lonely. I'm actually, speaking of lonely, I'm home alone, I've been home alone for the last couple of days.
Okay, yeah.
And, yeah.
Have you had to fend off any burglars or anything?
No? I'm just fending off fucking loneliness, man. I hate being alone. I would turn into an alcoholic, I think, right. If I lived by myself. I totally would. Yeah. I really just do not like staying at home by myself.
Right, yeah.
Because I work from home, I essentially just been in my apartment 24/7.
Yep, drinking.
All the time. Drinking. Yeah, I wish. Yeah. I fucking wish. But yeah, it sucks. I hate. That's one of the benefits, I think, of having a regular job, is you actually are forced to go out and interact with people.
Yeah, I mean, most jobs, yeah. Like, I have, I guess, a normal job, but I chose to work remotely, so... Mm. Alone quite a lot during the day as well.
Oh, so what am I complaining about then? You're in the exact same position as me. I don't know why I was hoping to hear a different. No, you got
to go with the opposite.
No.
But I had my wife, my kid come home in the evening, I guess.
Yeah, but I've got nobody.
You've been alone, though.
Yeah, I've been alone, just staring at the walls, staring at the shotgun.
Jesus, dark.
So what else?
I like your cup, Jaws.
Oh, thank you. Jaws. It's my favorite movie of all time.
Is it?
Jaws. Yeah, seriously. I love Jaws. I think it's the perfect movie. And it's just great. It's just I think I seen it when I was a kid as well. Mm-hmm. So I've always loved it then. But, it's really well written, well acted, directed. It's such an important movie because it's the first big blockbuster or whatever. But it has still led to my fear even today of in swimming pools. I'm afraid I'm going to get you my shark.
It sticks. Like, you showed me that film. I think we've talked about it before, but showed me that film.
Yeah, we used to watch all of the same movies.
We did, yeah.
When we were a kid. And the thing is that I have two older brothers, and Keith, you're the oldest in your family kids. So I would see all the stuff before you would.
Yeah.
Because my brothers would show it to me. So RoboCop, Predator, Aliens, all the cool shit, the violent shit that we're too young to be watching. And and then I'd show Keith.
And then you show me. And we both freaked out.
Yeah. It was great.
But I remember when you showed me Jaws, it was one of those core memories.
Mm-hmm. It's so good. It's such a good movie.
Stuck with me. Great movie. Yeah.
I got my Jaws mug, my Red Sox water thingy. I'm ready to rock and roll as we get potting. But how's the listener? How do you think they're doing today?
I
think they're doing all right?
Tell us.
Hope so.
Tell
yeah,
us
please.
How you are.
Listen, do you want us to do a minute of silence so they can talk to the camera? Maybe they're having a rough day.
Yeah. Are we going to do minutes? Okay.
Nah, we don't. Moving on.
Dead air.
All right. He is drinking water out of a Guinness glass.
I am indeed, yeah. Just trying to imagine his Guinness.
He closes his eyes.
Use imagination.
After his every sip.
Delicious.
Yeah. All right. So today we are talking about... The Dark Prince of Bel-Air. Do, 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 do. This is a really super interesting story. So this is a story that I actually came across a while ago. For the folks at home who check out the That Chapter YouTube channel, I covered a story set in the same place a couple of months ago, and it was while I was researching that I came across this story.
Mm-hmm.
So this is a story of Nathan Brooks, the guy who canceled Halloween. In the small town of Bel-Air.
Yeah, there's always one person.
There's always one guy
who
just has to ruin it for everybody else. Yeah. I mean, he did ruin it by sawing off heads, which is...
Yeah.
I mean, hey, listen, does it get any more Halloween than that? You know?
If it does, I don't hear.
Yeah, exactly. It doesn't get any darker than that. So today, we have the story of the Dark Prince of Bel-Air. This story kind of rocks in a weird way. I mean, it doesn't, but you know what I mean.
Yeah.
It's like when we say, I got a really good story for today. I mean, it's about horrible shit happening, but it's a good story.
Yes. Yeah.
This is one of them. Because it's about a horrible double murder. But if you're a metal, like Keith and I, it rocks.
Which we are. We're very heavy metal.
Oh, did you get new tattoos or something? Your arms are looking very colourful.
No. Same.
Okay.
Actually, no, it is.
They're blooming.
Do you know what it is? It's because I'm, for the first time in weeks, I'm wearing a grey t-shirt.
Oh, yeah.
I always wear black.
Yeah, that's true. Wow, so it's weird to see you without...
Yeah.
I bought you that. Keith's wearing a Salem
Massachusetts
t-shirt. I know. Look at him. Now he's going to be wearing white next time. Or different shade of black.
Slow down.
A lighter black. Essentially, that's what gray is. Just a lighter color of black. Same color. So today we have the story of a young man obsessed with Satanism, a small town, and Halloween. This story could be about you.
Mm-hmm.
What more do you need to tell us? I mean, listen, all Halloween stories, they all got to take place with young people, Halloween, small towns. This is like Goosebumps or some shit.
I do like the old ones. Actually, what liked was Are You Afraid of the Dark?
Are You Afraid of the Dark? That's was good. Was that the one where it had the dog with the glowing eyes in the intro? Or was that Yeah. So good. I think it was about, 6 months ago, you and I, we got drunk and just started watching loads. Because you can find it all on YouTube, pretty much.
Yeah, it was
great.
We got really drunk. We kind of ran out of movies to watch. And we were just put on the YouTube.
Speaking of movies to watch, we watched, there's a listener out there who recommended, what's that movie called? We watched, I have already forgotten the name of it.
Talk to Me.
We watched Talk to Me. I know the listeners are curious to hear our horror movie reviews. Mm-hmm. You know, it's review time with Mike and Keith, and it kind of sucked.
Yeah, I didn't really like it.
I thought it had some good moments.
Especially towards the end. It took a while to get into it.
Yeah, that's the problem. The movie only, I felt like it only started, 60 minutes in. I remember watching it and we're like, halfway through the movie, nothing is happening.
Yeah, yeah. It was after an hour, we're like, okay, we're getting going.
Exactly. And then the movie's over. Yeah. It was way too big. So it had some good ideas and had some good moments, but overall, not scary. Mm. And just kind of meh, I would say, overall. Forgettable.
Wasn't the worst, wasn't the best.
It's forgettable.
Yeah.
Very, very forgettable.
Yeah, I won't be watching it again.
No, I will not. Absolutely not. But what were we talking about again? What's the story? Oh, yeah, Nathan Burks. where am I? So this story, as I said, takes place at Halloween or just before the best season of the year. Mm. You know, it's we're recording this. Listeners could be listening to any time of the year. This is going to be up.
Yeah.
Evergreen. This is what we call evergreen content in the biz.
That's it. Maybe it is Halloween.
You never know. Listen, to people, they could be listening to this in 6 months' time. First time listener, whatever. Halloween is the best season of the year. Yeah. I look forward all year to Halloween, to October, really, because it's the best month of the year. Late September, early October, or late September, October is the best time of the year. I get sick of it, but then after by the time November is over, I'm like, all right, let's get back to Halloween again.
Yeah, that's
fuck this shit.
I love everything about it. I love the weather, the general vibe, just the whole season. Yeah, Halloween love. I love the movies that come with it.
Yeah,
I still find it's a little I have specific movies I watch around that time.
Mm-hmm. I save them for Halloween. Yeah, for October.
I'm a very I like to watch movies that during the summer. I'll watch horror summer movies. So Chainsaw Massacre or Friday the 13th.
To season, you have your seasonal movies.
I like horror movies to complement my surroundings. Mm-hmm. But then during winter, that's when I get into the film that I really like.
I wonder what says about you as a person.
Hmm. Probably not a lot.
No. Yeah, I can't think of anything. So what horror movies are you watching now? Well, we watched Talk to Me, which could be set at any time.
Yeah.
Set in Australia.
That's true. Yeah, I'm looking forward to that new horror movie coming out from the perspective of the killer or whatever that's called.
What?
It reminds you of Friday the 13th a little bit.
Oh, wait, I think I've seen a trailer for this. A lot of people at home are probably just slowly tuning out of listening to this podcast as we...
In a violent nature.
In a violent nature. All right, folks. Yeah. Prepare for a review of that from me and Keith in about 6 years when we get around to watching it. All right, let's get into the story. Okay, but what's it called again?
Nathan Brooks. Oh, the actual...
Well, thanks for also reminding me what the story we're telling us today. But what's the movie called?
Oh, In a Violent Nature.
Okay, cool.
Yeah.
All right. So anyways, let's get into this story of hell. He's not even listening.
I am listening.
Watching the trailer for the movie, aren't you? He's just got a weird smile on his face.
My whole screen went blank. He's like, oh no, my notes.
My notes, my precious. So Bel Air, funnily enough, for the folks at home who watch the videos, as I mentioned at the top, recently I visited it with the story of Brad McGarry. Brad McGarry was a fella. He lived there. He was a coal miner. And then one day he was found dead in his basement. And his best friend discovered him shot in the head in the basement of his own house. So the police investigated it. They spoke to his friend who found them. And then they were looking into the entire story of what Brad McGarry was doing the day he was killed. By the way, just this happened in 2017, I think, around then, recently enough. And then they were looking at CCTV and shit like this of houses near him. Anyway, long story short, spoiler alert, it turned out the friend, his best friend who discovered him, this guy also worked in the mines, was the one who killed him.
Oh, okay.
And now his best friend, he stumbled across the body, of course, with his wife and his daughter. But it turned out the friend was having an affair with Brad McGarry.
Oh.
He's being secretly gay with him.
Okay.
And then
I thought you were going to say with his wife. But no, with him. Okay.
Well, that can happen.
Yeah.
But with him.
Okay.
So and Brad McGarry, he says that he was going to expose that he was that they were having an affair or whatever.
Okay,
so he had to kill him. Who knows if that's true or not?
Yeah, yeah.
But yeah, so that's the last story I've covered in here.
Okay, cool.
So there you go. Although this one takes place quite a long time before the story of Brad McGarry. But yeah, as I said, same town, same story, coal mine country. This is set in eastern Ohio, but it's really in the Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania, western PA area. Like, it's right on the border. So Bel Air, Ohio, it's your typical American small town. Well, it's not even actually big enough to be called a town. Technically, it's a village. The village, it's in Belmont County, Ohio. Population, a couple of hundred folks, short of 4,000 residents. And this is the town's claim to fame, other than the story I just mentioned and the fact that we're talking about it. Keith, do you like Silence of the Lambs?
Yeah, I love Silence of the Lambs.
Do you really love Silence of the Lambs?
That's
right. Oh, yeah. That's pretty good. You know, I think it's like one of those movies where I'd never have actually sat down and watched all the way through.
Right, yeah. You know, if it's on, I'm going to watch it. Like, it's one of those RTE classics. When it's on, yeah. I'll watch it. You know?
Yeah, I just pick up bits of it. Like, yeah, I never actually sat down and watched the entire thing from start to finish. Yeah, no, because it's just like one of those movies that's so famous. I feel like I know exactly what happens.
Okay,
yeah, and I've seen so many bits of it, and it's just been so referenced. I'm sure, like, most people probably haven't even seen Jaws. They know the story.
Yeah, yeah.
You know? But yeah, you got Jodie Foster and that kind of stuff.
Good. That was
Thank
good.
You. Yeah, yeah. So if you're a big Silence of the Lambs fan, the movie, then you might recognize the Bel Air Bridge that appeared in the film, the 1991 film, the same year actually that the bridge closed down. In fact, this story, right, the story of the Dark Prince of Bel Air, it's creepy, but it has quite a few links to Silence of the Lambs. So, in the movie, the serial killer Buffalo Bill, he's supposed to be from, like, this area, Pennsylvania, western PA. So, it's set in the same area as Bel Air. The actor who plays Buffalo Bill, Ted Levine, who's a really good actor, he's, in fact, from Bel Air. Mm. And the house where Buffalo Bill lives in the movie, it's only 70 miles from town. So, the more you know, in serial killer, skinning people, lotion on the skin, all that kind of stuff.
Apparently so, yeah.
Yeah, hey, yeah. Ding, 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 right?
Like, for such a small town. A lot of history there. Yeah. A lot of creepy history.
It has. I've got three things. What more do you need? That's a triple ding. So, yeah, outside of you Hannibal Lecter mega stands, like me and Keith are, clearly, it's an otherwise unremarkable place. Outside of one very ultra very memorable night in September 1995. This is the story. On September 30th, 1995, Bel Air High School student, 16-year-old Ryan Brooks, was hanging out at his buddy, Eric's place. They were watching a football game when he realized that time had gotten away from him. It was almost 1:30 in the a.m. So being a responsible kid, Ryan thought he'd better, you know, give his parents a quick call to let them know he was all right. He imagined his parents might be worried as it was quite late, and that he decided to stay over at Eric's as I said, it was already pretty late. He'd be home in the morning. Instead of his parents answering the phone, though, it was Ryan's big brother, Nathan, who answered. Nathan was much more of a loner than his brother, Ryan. Only a year older, at 17, the two got along just fine, having occasional arguments as brothers do, but never anything too serious or heckin' real. Ryan told him of his plans to stay over to Eric's, but Nathan told him, didn't say to magic, that mom and dad wanted him home right now! Ryan was kind of annoyed, as you would be, if your brother is being a dick.
Yeah, tell him what to do.
But you can't fucking tell him what to
do,
cocksucker. Yeah, shut up. But he said, fine, I'll be home soon. Now, Ryan obviously was enjoying himself. He was watching the big game, you know, and he didn't really want to leave. So he ended up dawdling for about another hour before he actually set off home. But little did Ryan know that that decision to delay returning home literally saved his fucking life.
Procrastination can be good sometimes.
It is. Double ding for procrastination. I love procrastinating. That's what I do for half of this podcast. Sure, we're 16 minutes in and we've done fuck all.
Haven't really done it. The meat and bones of the story yet.
So Ryan arrived home in the early morning hours, expecting to find his family either already tucked up in their beds or maybe going through their bedtime routines. What he didn't expect, though, was to be walking into the aftermath of a crime so horrific that when the perpetrator finally went to trial, court officials actually decided that the crime scene photographs were far too graphic to be shown to the public. His parents were in bed where he expected them to be, only they were very, very dead. The first thing Ryan saw that made him think something was not quite right here wasn't the usual broken window or a door cracked open, drawers being rummaged through, or anything like that. No, it was something simpler but more traumatic. The severed head of his father, complete with 3 bullet holes in it. On the kitchen table was a punch bowl surrounded by sheets of paper. resting in the bowl was his father, Terry's, decapitated head. Ryan had no idea what had happened, and he rushed upstairs to check on his mother and his brother. In his parents' bedroom, he found the bodies of both his parents, minus his father's head. The crime scene was straight up, it was straight out of a horror movie. I mean, this is full-on torture porn, X-rated, not your usual R-rated cinematic affair. In addition to his father being decapitated, his mother had also been stabbed multiple times. Obviously, Ryan couldn't tell what had happened. He simply saw lots and lots of bloody wounds. And there was no sign of Nathan. But the mystery did not last long. On one of the walls was a note, held in place by a large knife. And the note read, "This is Nathan. I murdered two people, and I'm going to turn myself in." Those two people were his own parents. 53-year-old Terry Nelson Brooks, and 52-year-old Marilyn Jelaine Brooks. What Ryan didn't know was that when he and Eric had been driving home, Nathan had actually been at Eric's house looking for his little brother, but was turned away by Eric's mom. They probably would have driven right past Nathan as he was walking covered in blood.
Jeez.
Whether or not Nathan would have kept his word and turned himself in, we will never know, as the decision was taken out of his hands as Ryan called the police minutes after finding his parents' mutilated bodies. Road Sergeant Don Samples was first to respond, followed shortly after by a stream of sheriff's officers and the press. Nathan Brooks was taken into custody by the time the sun had come up on that following morning. Apparently he was found hiding near a local cemetery.
Eric and his mom, they were quite lucky that Nathan didn't start attacking them at their house.
Yeah.
Yeah, like it sounded like he was on a mission for total destruction.
Oh, we'll get to his mission. Yeah, for sure. He definitely had a mission.
Do you know when Nathan, when he was arrested, he's now retired. He was administrator for the Belmont County Jail and a deputy for more than 32 years. And he said the following when he met Brooks that night. So he said, "When I first encountered Nathan Brooks, he was numb. He did not speak any words, and that was odd to me for a boy of that age. He responded to my questions, but he didn't initiate much. He seemed very dark and distant, and I'd never seen someone with dark eyes like Nathan. He was completely numb. I don't want to say he scared me, because that's not what it was, but it was eerie, if that makes sense. I think I feared what he might do, and I'm telling you, I'll never forget his eyes. I learned during my career that when I've looked into someone's eyes and they're nothing but black and empty, there's something very
like a
wrong.
Doll's eyes, you might say.
Like a doll's eyes, very nice.
Ding, ding, ding.
There were two parents dead, and we know that he was hunting down his younger brother before he was arrested. So yeah, something was very wrong. But then we learned that about the hit list of names and the others that he wanted to kill. I wasn't scared of him, but he was a very, very empty young man who had those empty eyes and that blank stare. So yes, very eerie to me.
Mm-hmm.
So it sounds like this guy was just like not there.
Yeah. He just completely like snapped and fucking detached himself from like reality or some shit. Well, actually, we'll get to that too. So the joint funeral of Terry and Marilyn was on October 5th, 1995, and it was attended by more than 50 people, but drew attention from every corner of the country. Locally, there were many who knew Terry as a familiar face. He was the neighborhood mailman, and suddenly he was a victim of a crime that was being featured on national news. Rather than wearing the typical funeral attire, Ryan and several of his fellow students at Bel Air High School chose to wear their distinctive big red football jerseys in honor of his parents, who were incredibly proud of their son and his achievements both on and off the field. Ryan was joined by Jamie, the oldest of Terry and Marilyn's children, and of course, Nathan, though he was missing from the family lineup. Initially, he was being held at the Sargus Juvenile Center, but was later moved to jail in Barnesville. Sheriff Tom McCourt apparently chose to have Nathan held there rather than at the expected Belmont County Jail because there was just no way to keep Nathan away from the general population in Belmont, and it's probably a good idea to keep Nathan away from every other human who has ever lived on Earth.
Yeah.
The nature of the crime caught the attention, right, of the news media, like that. Almost immediately, and the more detail that came out, the greater the public's curiosity spiraled into panic, but not just any panic. This is that good old quality satanic panic. You gotta love it.
A classic. You're probably listening to heavy metal as well.
It was the mid-90s after all. It was all the rage to blame Big Red's influence for the worst of humanity's actions. For once, though, there was more than a little smoke to this fire. As always, when these gruesome crimes happen, people, they need to find a reason for why this, you know, whatever, however twisted the reason is, there has to be a why. And though I think we can all agree that Nathan, he had to be experiencing some kind of mental turmoil or illness, mental illness, but that doesn't quite do it. You know, that's not going to sell the papers. You really need to get in there. Yeah. That religion always sells. You got to add that satanic, devilish shit. I mean, hey, listen, I love fucking covering this shit. I love covering satanic murders. I'm like, because it's a sudden. It's interesting.
I seen the, like, there was headlines from around that time, and it was like, using like the severed head for like black masses and stuff. Like, yeah, there's like eye catching stuff. Yeah. Which, like I said, like I would have bought the newspaper.
Yeah.
But there was one councilwoman. She said, so there's a quote from her. So she said that his father Terry was my mailman at the time, and he and I would talk sometimes because he said he was concerned about his kids and how they were doing in school. She said, I got the impression that he put a lot of pressure on those boys with when it came to their grades. But I've no idea if that was one of the reasons why Nathan did what he did. There was a ton of rumours going around that Terry was, he was a fan of the old drink and a bit of an alcoholic, but he would turn mean when he drank. So the drinking along with the pressure he put on the boys may have pushed Nathan over the edge. Now, I do want to say this, like, rumours, and it's completely unstaffed.
So he deserved to have his head cut off is what you're saying. That's literally what Keith just said.
Is that what I'm saying?
That's what you said. I was reading between the lines of what you just said there.
But yeah, like it's a small town. There was many of these rumors going around, completely unsubstantiated. Mm-hmm. As I said, like it's a village. But even if they were true, it's not an excuse to kill someone.
Yeah, yeah, of course, yeah, yeah. I mean, what he did as well was so like horrific and grotesque and like torture, chopping off heads. I mean, we'll get into it later. But he like tried to crucify his mother to the wall. Like that's not just my dad's a drinker and maybe smacks me around. That's is like
complete overkill. Yeah,
yeah, yeah. Yeah. So even without the grim details, the scene of mayhem and slaughter that Nathan Brooks left behind in the early hours of that September 30th, 1995, it's beyond most sane people's comprehension. His father, Terry, had been shot 3 times in the head as he slept. All 3 shots were delivered with a hunting rifle at close range. The first would have been fatal by its lonesome. The second 2 were unnecessary for anything other than Nathan's own thirst for the satisfaction of creating as much carnage as possible. Post-mortem, Terry was decapitated with a hacksaw before his son carried his severed head to the kitchen, placed it in the bowl where it would soon be discovered by Ryan not long after. It may seem like that's as bad as it could get, and Terry Brooks had borne the brunt of Nathan's violent rage, but sadly for his mother, Marilyn, that was not the case. Like her husband, Marilyn Brooks had been shot also while she slept. Which of the 2 was shot first? We don't know. Likely, though, one of them would have woken up when the other was shot before they themselves were blasted at short range by a heavy chunk of copper-coated lead. After being shot, Marilyn was then stabbed multiple times, 10 in total. But these weren't any ordinary stab wounds. Some were made with a knife. Others were made with an axe. After the post-mortem exam, the coroner determined that many of the injuries were consistent with her killer attempting to pin Marilyn's body to the wall. Nathan had tried to crucify his own mother. Now, I don't think he would have been able to do that, but I don't think he was really thinking too much about how he was going to be able to do that. And I think the fact that he just tried to is
says a lot,
grim enough.
Yeah, the detectives, they found a ball peen hammer at the bottom of the bed, which is what they reckon he tried to use to crucify. But
really?
But yeah, so it's mad. Like, it's usually you see with these cases where kids kill their parents.
Yeah.
It's usually with a gun. Shot the head, but
yeah,
like,
yeah,
he was every tool he could find. It was just completely, as like I said earlier, like complete overkill. He was just in this rage of psychosis. Mad.
And this is what I think makes this story so interesting. Man, this should have been a Halloween special. It's good they were doing a 6 months of Halloween, but it's just because this story really, as we said at the top, it has it all, right? Its story is set about a month before Halloween, the small town, this young guy who just randomly murders his parents. Like, this story is like the quintessential urban legend.
Yeah.
Well, you know what happened in that house? Ooh, you know, you'll never believe it. Yeah, story. This is like a story you tell around a campfire, because then you get to the twist of the story, which is this part.
Yep.
That this is not, like, this is everything.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So, of all the terrifying discoveries found at 54496 Margie Avenue, Bel Air, that night, the one that raised the most concern was a simple piece of paper. So, at the top of the page in black ink was the phrase, "Satan shall give you peace." accompanied below by a crude goat man, kind of Baphomet-style demonic drawing, complete with a pentagram to the side. So this whole thing with the piece of paper, though, the goat, demon, whatever, pentagram, it was attention-grabbing. But it was the rest of the page and all the other writing that contained the actual worrying content. Because it was a list of 13 names. Two of those names were crossed out. One of those 13 was Ryan. And next to Ryan were the words dismember, decapitate. To say what Nathan did that night was inspected is insanely understated. No one seems to have seen it coming. Far from having Nathan pegged from the off as a bad lad or a bit of a wrong'un, the reviews were far more in the opposite direction. Even Monsignor George Yontz, who both supervised Nathan as an altar boy and presided over the funeral of his parents, he described Nathan as an always generous, gentlemanly, quiet, and pleasant. It's always the quiet ones. Even when it's the loud ones, it's the quiet ones.
Yeah, you gotta watch out for those quiet ones, man.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Thankfully, that can't be said about us because we just talk non-fucking-stop about nothing.
We talk so much that we start recording it.
Yeah, exactly. This is great. We gotta start recording this. So back to the list. It's so strange. It's fair to say it was obvious when reading it that Nathan's plans extended far beyond killing both his parents for such a quiet, calm, peaceful, generous, nice guy. Like his little brothers, several other names on the list, well, Nathan's plans for them were jotted alongside. Some of the names on this list had, beside, dismember, eviscerate, skin, some even had molest. So, fair to say, when the people on that list found out they'd been the intended target of a wannabe serial killer, it wasn't a fun day for them. Which I think comes back to this whole, you know, the urban legend thing of, wow, my name was on a man. Imagine finding out that your name, what, how would you feel, Keith?
I know, like, especially if you kind of only knew him. It's like, what, why?
Yeah, exactly. What the fuck did I hear
the list?
Ryan, it seems that if Nathan had got him, he was scheduled for dismemberment and decapitation. His mother and father were second and third on the list. His father had decapitate, which was done, and his mother eviscerate, crucify, which were attempted to be done. Details of the note and the circumstances of the murders quickly leaked through the press, and hours after the crime, almost everybody in this small, tiny town had heard about these satanic sacrifices at the Brooks house. News of Terry Brooks' head being found in the punch bowl, apparently prepared for a satanic service of some sort, that really seemed to catch on with residents, as it would. Absolutely. It's definitely, listen, you get up in the morning, you know, you're sleepy-eyed, bleary-eyed, you got your little morning wood going, you know, you're ready to have a nice cup of joe.
Yeah.
Guess what? Mailman's head was just found in a fucking punch bowl down the road.
I know. Yeah, like, that's, like, we grew up in a small village. And
yeah.
And kind of similar population as this town.
Yeah.
And there was a lot of rumors going around of like shit that went down, but it was just that, it was all rumors. Imagine if it was true like this.
Yeah.
That's just crazy.
Yeah. We had the killer clown rumors. I think we talked about that before.
I think we did, yeah. I think every town, well,
every town has its killer clown.
Every town has a killer clown.
Yeah. But yeah, if you have that, especially because, you know, this guy was in school, you would have known his brother.
Mm, yeah, yeah.
Man.
There was a lot of rumors going around about this, about the kill list that you were talking about, suggesting that there may have been actually several lists as well, not just the one list. But people, they were genuinely terrified that they might be on it, and they were worried that he was working with other satanic worshippers who wanted to finish what he'd started.
Ooh.
Law enforcement, they actually came out and said that the reports of such a list were completely false. However, during the trial, the public learned that there was in fact a list.
There was another list?
No, there was.
So
the law enforcement came out and was like, don't worry about
it.
There's no list. And then the trial happened. And they're like,
oh, yeah.
So we're getting to the list. Yeah, what? There is a list?
And you're on it. Yeah. Man, it's wild. So Bel Air had its very own boogeyman. And still to this day, the legacy of what Nathan did, almost more importantly as well, why he did it, has had ramifications throughout the town. There are children who weren't born when Nathan Brooks killed his parents, and the vast majority of them will have never seen or heard of the story, we won't know the grim details, but every year, come spooky season, they're still affected by it. There are tons of interviews with residents of Bel Air talking about how, prior to September 30th, 1995, kids in Bel Air, like they do in most towns, they would go unaccompanied by their parents, trick-or-treating around town without giving it any second thought in the world. After Nathan, though, everything changed, and there was such a pervading sense of fear that Halloween was literally cancelled for the following few years. Even now, rather than kids going out and knocking on random doors like they normally would, instead, kids in the town of Bel Air attend an event organized by the local church groups. The, quote, Boo in the Park, unquote, as it's known, is one of the most popular social events of the year in Bel Air, especially for young kids. For more than 10 years now, it's hosted hundreds of kids and their parents, offering them hot dogs and treats in a safe environment. That sounds fucking lame.
It's a good idea. Get every single child in the village to one specific area.
Ah, yes, exactly. They'll be perfectly safe there. That sounds lame. I'd rather go trick-or-treating. Yeah, remember me and you would go trick-or-treating all the time? Good times. Yeah, getting sweets and shit.
I love that. I think we definitely mentioned before in the Halloween episode.
Rocks. Yeah.
But we'd spend months coming up with like our plan of the states to hit. There was only three.
Yeah, so I know. I don't even like candy.
No. I just love walking around in costume.
That was yeah, I know.
Which was always just a black bin bag.
So, the bizarre thing, of course, is that Nathan never actually targeted random children or trick-or-treaters. That's why it's so odd that they would have this whole thing. Yeah. It's not like that whole story of the guy who poisoned his kid or whatever. Isn't that the original kind of like genesis of the urban legend of a guy killed his own kid for the insurance money?
Yeah, it's not like
sort of poison sweet thing come from.
Yeah, it's not like they'd be like, oh, he could have got anyone. It's like, no, he had a list.
Yeah, he was very specific, actually, about who he wanted. He literally was so specific, he wrote their names in. But that whole thing, you know, the whole thing of the Boo in the Park, it came from simply moral panic because of the satanic element of the killings. Rumors flew around town that Nathan might not have been alone in his satanic worship, secret cults, etc., etc. Maybe there were more of them hiding in the woods. Of course, that was complete horseshit. Maybe. I like to think that there are secret cults hiding because it makes the world more interesting.
Yeah, and like, why haven't we been invited?
I know, I want to go hang with them. But for anyone who lived throughout the 90s, this was really nothing new at all. And for those who didn't, it's kind of hard to explain just how seriously people took the whole satanic panic issue. Just watch that episode of The X-Files. I can't remember what the episode is called. Remember they go to school is run by Satanists.
Oh, yeah, that was good.
I can't remember the name. It's a German name. It's like in season 2 or 3, maybe. It's a good episode.
And turns out, like...
They are, actually. Yeah. They're in league with the devil. Good episode.
Yeah, the Satanic Panic, it was a wild time. We touched on it before in the Amityville Horror episode we did. Mm-hmm. If you haven't listened, go check it out. But from the 1970s right through to the 1990s, there was just extreme fear of the satanic cults which gripped the US. It was due to like years of news and cultural touchstones, like the Mason family trial in 69, the Exorcist movie in 73, then the Omen movie in 76, and then the publication of the book Michelle Remembers in 1980, which really popularized the idea of these repressed memories of satanic abuse. And this all primed the country for this paranoia and moral panic and satanic ritual abuse. But it all came to a head in like the 1980s with daycare abuse allegations, most notable, the McMartin preschool trial. There was just absolute hysteria over this in the US, and vigilante parents, they actually dug under the preschool searching for secret tunnels where they believed that there was these ritual sex acts that were happening on the children. But it wasn't just confined to the US. Like by the late 1980s, allegations began to appear throughout the world, including Canada, Australia, the United Kingdom, New Zealand, the Netherlands, Scandinavia. In the end, a 1994 book claims that of more than 12,000 documented accusations nationwide, investigating police were not able to substantiate any allegations of organized cult abuse.
Sounds like the people who wrote that report were Satanists themselves. Of course, that's what they would want you to think,
exactly.
Isn't it?
It was like all tied up in a neat little package.
I kind of feel like there would probably at least be some. Because we have a Satanist killer, like we're literally talking about. Like these people, like there was killers who did kill, who were like obsessed with like devil worshipping shit, who actually did murder people.
Yeah, we did.
Like we talked about, yeah, Pazuzu as well.
Yeah.
So I feel like there probably was some.
Yeah, but like he was just a mental man. It wasn't like he had like this organized cult, you know. But
well,
maybe
listen,
there is.
If there is,
let us know.
And I'm sure there is. Yeah. A, let us know, or B, you're doing such a good job, you haven't been found out. So fair play to you. Nathan stood trial for the double murder of his parents the following year in front of a jury of 6 men and 6 women, all watched over by County Judge Charles Knapp at the Belmont County Courthouse. It was an unusual case from the get-go. not only because of the media's attention and bizarre circumstances of the murder, but also because of Nathan's defense. At no time did the counsel for the defense, Belmont County Public Defender Jim Nicholson, actually argue against the fact that Nathan killed his parents. Instead, they were going with the not guilty by way of insanity. The thing with the insanity defense is that it's not just the case of proving that the defendant was, slash is, suffering from the influences of mental illness at the time of the crime, but that they were affected to such an extent that they didn't know right from wrong, which it's actually very specific. And it's quite hard to actually reach the level of not guilty by, you can't just say, I'm crazy. It's like, no, you have a very specific set of circumstances to reach.
Yeah, you could be, but you still know right from wrong.
Right,
very
exactly.
Hard to prove.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. So it all came down to the decision of a panel of three experts who were brought in specifically to give their opinion as to whether Nathan met the criteria to be ruled legally insane when he killed his parents. Unfortunately for Nathan, the three were split in their opinion, and it was not in his favor. Without the experts' majority backing, there was no shielding Nathan from the full severity of the law. And with the jury hearing more and more detail about his parents' demise and Nathan's kill list plans, he was doomed to a guilty verdict, and the maximum punishment looked likely early into the trial. In the end, it took under 3 hours for the jury to find Nathan guilty of 2 counts of aggravated murder and a single count of using a firearm in the commission of a felony. On October 27, 1996, again right before Halloween, Judge Knapp sentenced Nathan Brooks to 2 life sentences to run consecutively, with an extra 3 years for the firearms charges. Under Ohio's revised code, Nathan won't be eligible for a parole hearing for at least 43 years.
Actually,
Keith did it with the finger, you fucking son of a bitch.
Back at it again.
Shut up, I'm keep going. Nathan is now...
So according to online records posted by the Ohio Department of Rehabilitation and Correction, prisoner A337726, Nathan Brooks, at the London Correctional Institution will meet with members of the Ohio Parole Board in August 2025.
Wow. Nathan, if you get out, want to be on the pod?
Yeah.
You can have him on. He'd be pretty good. Nathan, what was it like to behead your dad and murder your mom and then write a kill list?
So if the parole board, if they do deem Brooks to be rehabilitated, according to online information, he could be out as soon as October 1st, 2025. So exactly 30 years since Nathan Brooks murdered his parents. But I don't think he's going to get out. For everything I've read, people who were involved in the case or lived in Bel Air at the time, the murders are still very much at like front of mind.
Yeah.
For instance, so yeah, I don't think he's going to get out.
He'll always be known as the man who cancelled Halloween, although I haven't really been able to find out much about what he's like now. How he's getting on in the London Correctional Institution in London, Ohio. I haven't been able to find out much about him.
Hmm.
Other than now he's in
it. I've seen a photo, that was it. And like the before and after. And it looks like just literally his hair has moved from the top of his head down to his beard.
He's going in upside down heads?
Flips,
yeah. upside down faces, yeah. Okay, well, hey, listen. Nathan, I don't know. I was going to say good for you, but I can't say that, so...
Bad for you.
Yeah, exactly. Nathan... Moving on. Yeah. Actually, let me move on. No, I'm doing the... Actually, I'm doing the finger point. Look,
there goes the
look
finger.
Look at me, Keith. Look, I'm stealing your move. To the other, Nathan Brooks. We talked about Nathan Brooks, N-A-T-H-A-N. Now we're talking about Nathan, N-A-T-H-O-N.
Mm.
Very similar name to the uninitiated.
Yeah, and who I actually started researching initially when... Because you reached out to me. And
did you start researching? You fucking idiot.
I was about halfway through and I was like, none of what Mike said is in this. It's like, this isn't even set on Halloween.
Dumbass. No, I know. Actually, I think I kept on coming across this guy too because it happened. Well, he's got the same name and he also did something very similar, which we will briefly talk about.
Mm-hmm.
In 2013. Thanks to an incident hundreds of miles away, Bel Air's old wounds were brutally reopened, thanks largely to some scary similarities. One in particular. On March 8, 2013, John and Beth Brooks awoke to a dark figure standing in the doorway of their bedroom. Soon, multiple shots rang out that night, and both John and Beth Brooks were shot in the head multiple times. They had no idea that it was their son, 14-year-old Nathan. Nathan was a happy and successful kid who, seemingly, Maybe just like his namesake, Nathan Brooks of Bel Air. He just snapped like that. Without saying a word, Nathan raised a .22 Smith & Wesson revolver he'd taken from his father's gun cabinet at the family home in Moses Lake, Washington, and fired 6 shots at his parents, striking them both in the head multiple times. Unlike their 1995 counterparts, though, John and Beth survived the assault. John, in fact, called 911 himself. It was astonishing that both survived, and when later asked, the neurologist simply couldn't give them a straight answer as to why they weren't dead after being shot in the head multiple times with a revolver, but there you go. Nathan, he was taken in for questioning. He initially made up a story about a home invasion before he admitted that he had himself tried to kill his parents. He actually had thought he had killed his parents until the police informed him otherwise. John and Beth have actually gone on to forgive their son, saying that what he did was wrong, but they understand why, which you do, because I don't think anybody else did. Their son, Nathan, said he was in a deep depression at the time, and though his intention had been to kill his parents, when he pulled the trigger the last time, he was overcome with regret. See, the thing is, though, he pulled the trigger 6 times, and it took him 5 to feel regret, which is like, yeah. No, the last time. Yeah. First 5, though, I was fine. Yeah. You know? It was only 6 shot.
Yeah, the last time, I really overdid it.
Yeah, exactly. I only wanted to shoot him 5 times. The 14-year-old Brooks, he was pretty angry with his parents for grounding him. Mom, fuck you! And they took away his Xbox as an extra punishment for getting detention when he was late to class. The straw that broke the camel's back was when he was told he couldn't play on the school's basketball team no mo.
Now we can. Oh, no, we can't.
Yeah, shit. Sorry, Nathan.
Didn't think it through.
Yeah. As I said, he originally claimed a burglar had shot his parents, but he was quickly undone by a CCTV recording, which you can view for yourself online. It's actually kind of creepy. It's pretty unsettling as he walks through the house with a gun in his hand. The fact that his parents survived, that saved him from spending the rest of his life in jail, and instead he got 15 years. He still remains in penitentiary system today, and he's also still in contact with his parents to this day, where he sees them quite regularly. So Nathan Brooks of Bel Air, he is not.
Unsurprisingly, both his parents were diagnosed with PTSD. I know, like,
shot in the head will probably do that to you.
But the dad said he had many, many, many sleepless nights and nightmares, lots of issues to overcome. I seen an interview with them and they seem fine.
Yeah.
Like the two of them are like talking away and chatting. You wouldn't swear they got shot in the head.
Yeah. Multiple
times. Like, I'm sure it's like under.
You're like normal.
they look fine.
Like, yeah.
Not a big deal.
Exactly. No. All right. There we go. That's the story of Nathan and Nathan.
Mm.
The two Brooks boys and the story of the double murder, the satanic murder that cancelled Halloween.
Mm-hmm.
Perfectly told for you this spring, this spring evening or spring morning, whatever you're listening
Ooh.
To. Miss Boogie. All right, Sinead, that wraps up this whole episode of the TC Pod. Keith, what have you got to say? Tell me your thoughts. You know, you just riff for a while. I'll just let you talk. I just want to see where you go with
it. My final thoughts? I have one thought. Don't name your kid Nathan Brooks.
It's bad, apparently.
There was another person as well, because when I was looking, I said earlier, when I was looking up Nathan Brooks, I ended up on the Nathan Brooks you just talked about.
Yes.
But then there was like another Nathan Brooks that was, he was a priest. He was being done for abuse. So there's a lot of, but then I also came across a guy called Nathan Brooks who was, I think he's a criminologist. He wrote like loads of stuff. So he was pretty cool. So,
But he knows the psyche of he knows the criminal mind.
Exactly. Mm.
Interesting. Yeah. All right. Well, I guess, so if you're listening to this and your name is Nathan Brooks.
Stay away from
us. Yeah, stay away from us. There you go. All right, here, listen, thank you so much for listening to this all podcast, giving us a shout. Appreciate you for doing so. Next episode will be out next week. I will make sure to schedule it to go live at the appropriate time, unlike I did last week or whenever I did. I have no idea when you're listening to this. Anyway, but yes. All right.
Yeah.
That's it.
Awesome. Great.
All right.
See you.
Thanks.
That was good.
Bye.
Ooh. You know what's mad? With Silence of the Lambs, Anthony Hopkins, he was only in it for 16 minutes, I think it was. But he won Best Actor for the Oscars.
Listen. Shark was only in like 30 seconds, Joss.
And now
that's like the best shark ever. So I think a shark beats Anthony Hopkins.
He didn't even have any lines.
Yeah, exactly. And it's the best shark ever. So...